WhatsApp Aubrey on 072-702-1702.
Clinical psychologist Leonard Carr joins me now on the line. Leonard Carr, thank you very much, sir, for joining me. I really appreciate your time, sir.
You're welcome, Aubrey. Thanks for inviting me.
So, children who end up the throes of criminal behavior that'll make your hair stand on end, Leonard, seem to follow a particular pattern.
Right.
And they seem to follow a particular pattern as a result of certain life realities that are thrust upon them through no choice of their own. But what it does do is that it gives us the reality of a crime-infested country which starts out with juvenile delinquents who very often become more mature and more skilled criminals. What are the variables? What are the causes? What are those things that we can identify in the formative years of a child that can lead to criminal behavior?
Okay, well, actually, it's very simple. There are not a lot of variables. There's one key variable and one secondary variable. The key variable has to do with attachment. Because when a child feels held, supported, loved, responded to in an appropriate way, they develop a connection to their own emotional world, and they develop a connection to other people. They learn to recognize their own feelings, the validity of their own experience, and through that connection, they learn to have empathy and to be connected to others. When a child grows up without that support, because attachment figures are unreliable or not available, or not consistent, you know, let's say the child's being passed around, then the child never develops that sense of connection with themselves, with their own feelings and experience, and therefore they never learn to empathize with others. In other words, connection, which is something that human beings are primed for. I mean, you can look at a baby at the earliest age, and babies are seeking connection and looking to see where other people are all the time. I mean, that's different from any other creature.
Yeah.
That's social awareness.
Yeah.
When a child loses that, then they don't develop the ability to empathize with others. They don't have feelings. They also don't have enough contact with adult figures to learn values like compassion and respect and all of that.
Yeah.
And also, you know, and this is often the result of children being abandoned because parents have to work all day and leave them in creche or whatever it is, that children's primary attachment figures become other children. In other words, other toddlers, other small children.
Yes.
That's your role model, and that's, you know, that's who you're learning about life from. And, you know, all little children are, by nature, I mean, that's a healthy development,
yes,
are narcissists, right? Children live in a self-referenced world.
Yes.
They're only interested in their own needs and interests. And obviously raising a child is about helping them to see a world beyond themselves. But if you've been brought up by other children and learning to copy other children, then you never get the opportunity to see a world beyond yourself. You're practicing from a very early age just being driven by self-interest.
Mm.
So throw all of that together and you've got someone who can slit someone's throat for 10 rand.
Mm. Mm. So Leonard, I mean, for me, that is so powerful that the reason why as parents we need to be close to our children is not only for them to be attached to us, but to be attached with their own inner world that has reference and education from the values that we teach them. You see, I never, that was so powerful. So the reason why children ultimately become criminals and become adult criminals is because there is no connection with their own inner world that is informed by values of compassion, of love, of empathy. It's because what is in there then? Is it just hollowness? What's inside there?
It's literally hollowness. It's detachment. It's absolute detachment from any feelings or any human connection. And then to take it a step further, when we catch these people, instead of giving them the love and the connection that they need, we punish them, which basically reinforces the original wound.
Yes.
Deepens the cynicism, deepens their sense of living in a dog-eat-dog world, deepens their sense of it's me against the hostile world, and I have to do whatever I can to survive. So our way of dealing with it isn't addressing the core problem that's driving it. It actually reinforces the core problem.
So instead of being rehabilitative in the way that we deal with their offense, we become punitive, and you're saying that that punitive approach is what reinforces that emptiness, that hollowness, which
the
becomes...
emptiness and also the belief system that this is a hostile world and only the strong survive, and, you know, do unto others and do it fast or they'll do unto you.
What then... Look, life happens. Criminality happens. We wish it didn't. Society is looking for its pound of flesh when somebody commits a crime. That's why we have laws. What should the approach be, Leonard?
Well, first of all, you know, we have to realize that parents who didn't grow up with a healthy attachment are not going to be able to be present to their children in a way that gives the children that security. So first of all, we've got to become aware of the problem. And, you know, for example, things like maternity leave and paternity leave and things like economic empowerment that doesn't force people to leave babies and toddlers in creches from 6 in the morning to 6 at night. or children growing up on the streets, or children growing up with grandparents who are too old or disabled or overwhelmed or whatever to look after them. These are the issues of society that we have to address. You know, we have to realize also, if you look at it through the lens that I'm seeing the problem, you know, we're dealing with a huge legacy issue from apartheid.
Yeah.
Because apartheid was a structural, systemic breakdown of the family and it forced millions of children to grow up without proper parental care and, you know, in home environments and all of that.
It was, if I understand you correctly, a very deliberate, systemic, systematic way of creating generations of criminals.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously that wasn't the intention, but that certainly been the effect. Because there was a total indifference to the consequences, you know, of the people who designed it. So we're living with a legacy of that. You know, you have to realize that even for children who did grow up in families, a lot of them, you know, whose parents were victims of that system, are beneficiaries of the trauma that's been passed down from one generation to another.
Sure.
And that's why the issue is so widespread. One of the reasons that the issue is widespread. So the solution is that we have to promote family. We have to empower, you know, mothers to be able to be present to their children. I mean, and this has got to do with economic empowerment, because often people are forced to be away from their children just for economic reasons, for survival. So these are all the levels that we have to be dealing with the problem if you want to root it out of society.
Yes.
And dealing with the criminals is just dealing with the symptoms. You know, it's It's like trying to heal, an infected wound by draining pus without giving an antibiotic. So there's just more pus on the way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I hear you. I absolutely understand what you're saying. Listen, I've got a couple of calls on 011-883-0702. Leonard Carr is my guest. He's a clinical psychologist. And we were sitting around as a team, Leonard, and just thinking about some of the topics that we were, wanting to introduce. And we were all stuck in the question where we said, listen, it looks like we are overwhelmed and being overridden by an ever-growing tide of criminality. But it's even getting stronger because it's starting to have in the sociopathic behavior that we get from certain criminals, it's also starting to have an element of entitlement. So criminals will take your stuff and still do it with the kind of boldness that has an entitlement to it. Does that make sense to you, Leonard?
Absolutely. Because the... You know, there are certain stages of moral development, and the stage of moral development that you're describing, we could say is like an egocentric stage.
Yeah.
But there's an unhealthy egocentrism and a healthy one, and if you think about it, the corporate world is supposedly built on a kind of a healthy egocentrism. And that's because people who've got to that stage have been socialized. They've already been taught the rules of society. They've already internalized values and boundaries and morals. But when you have the healthy egocentrism and the unhealthy who haven't been socialized cannot recognize that the people who are doing well and producing prosperity and all of that have passed through that socialization phase. They just basically imitate, they can have BMWs, if they can have whatever, why can't I? It kind of wakes up that same spirit.
Yeah. I'm talking here about scenarios where somebody will believe that it is their moral duty to correctively rape somebody. Do you see where I'm going?
Oh, that.
Different
dimension.
Yeah. Or for example, that it is correct for somebody to beat even somebody that I believe is a criminal, to beat him to the point of death as well. And it seems to be a commission of crime that doesn't understand that what you are doing is also a crime. I'm almost wanting to challenge you a little bit on the corporate egocentrism a little bit.
You're bringing in a whole new dimension. I misunderstood.
Yeah.
I misunderstood what you meant. You're bringing in a whole new dimension.
Yeah.
And this dimension has got to do with belonging and community. And basically, people that haven't been socialized into the mainstream community because of all the factors that we've said.
Mm.
Create amongst themselves their own community with their own rituals, their own morals, and their own rules.
Mm.
And that entitlement doesn't come from a personal kind of criminality or whatever it is.
Yes.
It comes from a consensual agreement or a consensual belief system.
Yeah.
That this is our culture. These are our values. That's what gangs are.
Yes.
This is the code that binds us together. And we have our own morality, because these are people that have never felt part of a mainstream family, community, etc. And this is what I mean by people turning to a peer group.
Yeah.
They're creating their own little subcultures.
It sounds to me...
And they honestly believe that they're justified and right within the norms of their subculture.
It sounds to me, Leonard, before I take the calls that have come through already, that the same reasons why a child will become criminal or criminally inclined is because of the detachment that you've explained from parent and the detachment from their own inner world that teaches them compassion, that teaches them empathy and sympathy and all of those kinds of things, that it's the same kind of variable that creates the gang, the same variable that creates the subculture that believes that it is correct when it goes and does certain gang-related violent stuff.
Exactly. We don't fit in with the mainstream. We don't fit in with authority. We don't buy into all of that, but we support each other. And that's what I was saying about if children are not socialized by adults and they learn attachment through their peers, then that is who they turn to for support and for moral guidance.
Yeah.
So you've got a bunch of egocentric people who are making their own society.
Sure. Let's take some calls. Leonard Carr is my guest, clinical psychologist. We are looking at variables that create criminality. And it appears that there are not too many of them, except the fact that if we don't nurture, if we aren't present, if we don't allow our children to develop an inner world that is informed by empathy, by compassion, then we are creating a perfect storm for future criminality. Felix is in Nelspruit, Ombombela. Felix, hi.
Good evening, Braobi. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you very much for making the call, Felix. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, it's an interesting topic you are discussing.
Yeah.
And please, we must understand it this way. You see, every child is born innocent. Every child is born pure, clean, and innocent. But of course, he is ignorant and he is small. But the world in which he is born into, the society in which he is born into, is pathologic. The society we have created is a pathologic society. But what is this pathology? It is a separation pathology in which every human being thinks they are separate from the other. Communist separate from capitalist, atheist separate from theist, there is a separation pathology. So everybody thinks, I must kill you to be able to make it. It's a dog-eat-world pathology I'm talking about.
Mm.
So this child, which is innocent, is not supposed to grow up in a pathologic world. He doesn't have a chance. His innocence will be taken away.
Yeah.
He's told that you are black, you must fight against the white. Or you are white, you must fight against the black. He's told that you are poor, you must fight against the rich. Or you are rich, you must fight against the poor. So there is a separation pathology which is destroying all the innocent children that have been born. And there is no way out of it unless humanity wake up to its oneness, unless humanity wake up to its connectedness. Let me tell you something. There is no way a lion will be so hungry and starving, and he will hunt down another lion for food. It never happens. Man has descended below animal levels. A hungry dog will never hunt down another dog for its food. But that's what humanity has been now. So unless we close the gap, unless we wake up to the fact that we are one, this pathology will never go away.
Felix, I'm going to stop you there. Thank you very much for your call. Owen is in Brits. Hi, Owen.
Good evening.
Good evening to you, Owen.
I'm of the view that as parents sometimes, like you said, I don't know if it's your guest who said it, that we are more into punitive measures, that we always meet out to our children whenever they've done wrong.
Yeah.
And whenever they've done something right, we are ignorant of that. We don't make too much noise about it.
Mm.
And what I've realized about children, whenever they do something good and you make noise about it, you show that you are impressed by whatever that they've done or which is good, they will always try to impress you at all times.
Yes.
And that's one thing that we don't do at times.
Mm.
And the other thing, of when coming to this issue of nyaope, where we're seeing young people consuming too much of nyaope, you know, I'm of the view that South Africans, we are a nation that embraces drunkenness. The older generation...
But could it not be, and we'll ask what Leonard has to say, that the proliferation of drug use, of alcohol abuse, particularly amongst children, youngsters, has something to do with that hollowness, with that painful nothingness that lives as a result of a lack of attachment to something, or a lack of attachment to a living inner world. that it is actually a pain that they are trying to numb by drugging themselves.
What I see is that older generation, they don't indulge in nyaope. They indulge in beverages that are intoxicating, which is beer and whiskey and stuff like that. And young people, in return, because older people tend to embrace that. It's a feel-good thing to do. And
All right.
Young people, they mimic that in a different way.
No, absolutely. They amplify it, in fact. Owen, let me let you go. Thanks very much for your call. Leonard, what Felix had to say, but interesting what Owen has to say about the fact that there is an amplification of the substance of choice these days. It's no longer beer or whiskey, but it is nyaope. It's all of the drugs that exist at the moment. How do you explain that?
Well, look, I mean, first of all, you know, the availability of drugs is a huge issue. And I find that the younger people today become very cavalier about drugs. It's become very normalized. But exactly what you said and what Owen said is true, that it is about filling the emptiness. It's the same thing as addiction to cell phones and all of it. It is because children are not learning how to relate, how to get fulfillment and satisfaction out of human connection and intimacy, that they're looking more and more to distraction, to living a fantasy life online. All of these are substitutes for real connection and real intimacy. But what Owen was also saying is that being punitive towards children, physical punishment, noticing what they do wrong and noticing and not noticing what they do right also creates that empathy, that emptiness. Because you're focusing children on what they lack, on what they aren't, on what they miss, how they're broken or defective or not good enough. And that push, that one, first of all, any kind of corporal punishment or shaming or any punishment that pushes the child away is going to cause the child to numb or to become dead inside or distracted or whatever it is.
Leonard, let me just quickly take this one call and then I'm going to ask you to wrap up. Penelope is in Randburg. Hi, Penelope.
Good day to you. Thank you, Aubrey. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, Penelope. What is your question to Leonard?
Yes, thank you. I come from a family of five children, so four siblings and myself. Out of the five, obviously we were brought up by the same parents that had to work all day, and we had to go to school and a helper took care of us somewhat, when we got home from school. However, there is only one, which is the second to last born, that turned out very bad. From the age of 13, he started stealing. At the age of 19, and he's always stolen, he left school at in standard grade six now.
He's literally the black sheep of the family, if I can put it that way, Penelope. And you want to understand, given the fact that he grew up with the rest of you, why he has sort of become the anomaly in the family.
Absolutely.
All right. Penelope, I'm going to let you go because I've got to take... we've come to the news. Leonard, will you stay with me just for 5 minutes after the news? Because there's other questions that are coming through and I have to take the news. Please, please, please stay with me. All right? Leonard Carr, clinical psychologist. Let's take the news at 9 o'clock. In the way that they do so, we do ourselves and we do those children a major, major disservice. Some great calls coming through. And I've asked Leonard to just stay just one more, just a few more minutes with us as he replies to the questions that were asked by Penelope. And, of course, somebody else here saying, "Hi, Aubrey, is there any proof that all children are born the same? Where does your psychopath come from?" No, man, come on. Anyway. Leonard, thanks very much for staying with us. I really appreciate it, sir. So the last question from Penelope was, we are a group of children raised in the same conditions, raised under the same value systems, But one of our siblings is the purple sheep. Somebody said, maybe don't say it blackly. Is the purple right. sheep of the family in terms of the way that he behaves. He's a thief. He does all sorts of sociopathic things. But how do you explain that, given the fact that we were nurtured in exactly the same way? We were together in our upbringing. And as perhaps clumsy as this question might be, I think it fits right in the center of that question, which is there any proof that all children are born the same?
Right. So I'll start with that. Children are not born the same. So there's proof that children are not born the same in the sense that every child has a different disposition, a different temperament, different strengths, different vulnerabilities, and therefore every child needs different parenting. So no two children have the same parents.
Mm.
Because number one, how the child experiences their parenting, the way they're parented, depends a lot on the child's temperament, disposition, needs, etc. You might have a child that's very, very sensitive and actually needs a lot of space. And so a very doting parent could be intrusive for that child.
Yeah.
And you might have a child who has very great needs for support and nurturing. And then if you have a distant parent, that would be good for the first child that I mentioned, but bad for the second child. And the parent who's more nurturing would be good for the second child, but not good for the first child. So no two children have the same parenting. And also parents respond differently to different children.
Mm.
So some children push parents' buttons, and some children, parents find it easier to love and to be close to because maybe they're familiar or, you know, maybe they fit in with a parent's temperament.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe another child reminds them of a parent who they had difficulty with.
Yeah.
So they recreate the issues they had with their own parent with their child. So there are all of these variables.
Yes.
Plus, in Penelope's story, you know, in South Africa, we tend to underplay or undervalue the role of helpers. But a lot of helpers actually fulfill the role of attachment figures and parents.
Yes.
And a lot of children were protected, especially, you know, white children, were protected from absent parents because they had very present and nurturing helpers.
And the reality then is that the children of the helpers were then robbed of the presence of their parents. And that's why in certain communities, particularly black communities, you'll find the recurrence of that criminal behavior because that attachment was not there.
Exactly. That is one of the great ironies and the great tragedies of our society, that a lot of children were brought up at the expense of that person's, that helper's actual children who lost out on parenting. It's an incredible tragedy.
Well, there is another view. Ken Kuhn says, sadly, all these reasons and excuses aren't going to help. All the studies and so-called professional theories and doctrines are a load of rubbish, says Ken Kuhn. And in fact, detrimental to society. Go back to basics, says Ken. God, discipline, respect, love, care, and harsh law enforcement. Leonard, your final words.
Well, you know, if you're going to say God, meaning that people respect and honor and love each other, yes. If you're going to talk about being punishing and blaming and all of that, then that is the exact mentality that has given rise to many problems. And one has to look at societies, for example, in Europe, who had that mentality and perpetrated untold, you know, genocides and tragedies unprecedented in human history.
Mm.
So it's all very well to take that approach, but in actual fact, children who grew up in indigenous traditional societies where there was love and nurturing and where villagers raised children and not isolated nuclear families, and when there wasn't harsh discipline, but rather guidance and support, those are the communities where children flourish the most. And those values of community and empathy and respect, that is what we have to be recreating.
It's interesting. It's interesting, Leonard, that in most indigenous societies all over the world, you don't have the phenomenon of prisons.
Of?
Prisons. Jails.
Exactly. Prisons are barbaric.
All right, Leonard, I really am looking forward to another conversation with you as far as this is concerned. And I suppose this conversation is a prelude for us to understand why perhaps we live in such a violent and increasingly criminal society. Perhaps it starts there. And I really appreciate you, sir, for coming through and just giving us that particular perspective. Really, really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure.
Great stuff. Leonard Carr, clinical psychologist. When we come back, my Blair is coming to talk to us for the After 9 report.